I barely scratched out of school, out of high school as well. You know, my first time I picked up a drink, I was 17 years old when my mother married the gentleman I called Dad, and he was my stepfather. However, I called him Dad since I was two. Mom was his mistress. So that's the kind of relationship that I grew up with. I didn't know. I had no idea of what a healthy relationship looked like. So Mom and Dad get married, then I move to Rancho Palos Verdes and I go to Rolling Hills High School where I graduate. I'm meeting some of the rich kids now, from a poor white girl to, you know, Rancho Palos Verdes. And Well, my first drink happened when I was 17 years old. And I was at a party, and they gave me peppermint schnapps, Lohmbräu, and Southern Comfort. All mixed up into all kinds of good stuff. It was like, take a shot, drink right out of the bottle of Southern Comfort and peppermint schnapps, have a beer to wash it down, and then hop into a 280ZX with my good friend and rip around those mountain roads where I would be like, pull over, you know, I'm going to get sick. I realize today that I drank alcoholically from the first day I drank. When I was 17 years old, I was alcoholic. Me personally, I believe it was in my genes. My father is an alcoholic. My grandmother died of cirrhosis of the liver. There was no alcohol in the house, ever, when I was growing up. I picked it up at 17, and I was off and running for 12 years. So I'm 17, I'm dating the, you know, the richest guy in Palos Verdes, and I was also introduced to side dishes. So for those of you that want a pure alcoholic, you don't have one, okay? I'm a real alcoholic who does side dishes, and that's part of my story, right? So, you know, from 17 on, and I get my driver's license, I drink, I get drunk, I black out, I pass out, I come to. There is no other way that I know how to drink. I do not know how to drink and stop. As much as I want to stop, I don't. So, you know, my whole youth was, you know, pretty boring. But it's made me who I am today. Because as a young girl who was bullied by everybody, tried to be beat up, and I stick up for those, and I taught my children not to bully, because it's a very serious issue, bullying. So I drank, you know, I drank like the best of them. I was in Hermosa Beach, and I was a roller skater, and I was a beach bunny, and we would skate down the Strand, and I'd stop at every place that had, you know, they actually offered you and asked you to stop and have drinks. And that was my life until I was 29 years old. I kept doing the geographics, trying to get out of the messes that I put myself into, because when I'd drink, I'd get drunk and I'd black out and I'd pass out, and when I'd wake up, I do not know how I got to where I woke up, or how or who is next to me. Where's my car? Where are my keys? You know, I mean, and this went on endlessly. As much as I wanted it to stop, it didn't stop. So I go to Newport Beach. I start to work as a barista. I'm still not 21. I go to work as a barista in a beer and wine place. And of course, you know, back in the 80s, everybody remember the little bindles? And they'd flip them and they'd make them into my little tip jar. And I'd stay up, keep the bar open late. And that's just the way it worked back then in my world. And I left, I got pulled over, and the guy pulls me over, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, I'm doing the sobriety test, and he puts me in, I'm going to jail. I got my first DUI back in 1983. And I'm like, please don't lock me too tight, I'm scared, right? So he didn't, you know, he didn't, and I was able to pull my hand out and get to the Orange County police station and slip my hand back in, and then proceed to go to the drunk tank with everybody else. And then I get out. 2 weeks later, I'm driving. Same cop pulls me over And he's like, shut up. I don't want to hear a word out of you. Clap those things up. My second DUI, back to back. You'd think that I would stop, but I didn't know how. I just kept saying, well, I'll just take one shot an hour. Well, that didn't work. That didn't work, right? So I got into a lot of trouble, a lot of just, you ladies and guys know what it's like, that incomprehensible, demoralizing situations that we get ourselves into. It talks about it in the book, right? So I leave Newport Beach. I come back to Torrance, where I'm from, Redondo Beach. And this is 1990 now. I move back, and I'm dating a gentleman. I borrow his car, his truck, and I get pulled over again. This time in Redondo Beach, I get my third DUI. It's 1989, and I'm sentenced to AA. See, there's a lot of stuff that has happened in there, and you'll hear that in the share when I go through the steps, because that's how I like to share, the unmanageability, the powerlessness, right? So I'm third DUI. I show up on July 11th, 1990 at the Torrance Lomita Alano Club. And there I was like, oh my gosh, you know, this is neat. I was an AA. I was running the Alano Club. I was making the coffee. I was ordering around who would clean out those dirty ashtrays, including myself. I organized the dances. I did all of that. However, the person that I had as a sponsor, her name was Debbie. You'll hear Debbie's throughout my share. Debbie was the secretary of the Alano Club. And the only thing that she had me do was help organize her wedding. Right? That's what a good sponsor does. You know, kind of like the Karate Kid. You know, let me do your chores to learn how to do karate. Well, I organized her wedding with her in Las Vegas. So I'm in the Alano Club at Torrance Lomita Alano Club. I'm involved. I'm totally involved. And Debbie was a good friend of mine. And that's when I went to the Hawthorne Club, the Birch Club. And there he was. Tall, dark, Italian, and handsome. And that was all you needed. Right? We danced the night away. We met in October. And I got sober in July, remember? And we met in October. And boom, we were together. What does it talk about? Boy meets girl on AA campus when love at first sight happens. Well, you two need to be well enough acquainted that nothing will rise up to cripple you later, in a sense, correct? Well, the gentleman and I got together. We had a baby, and he was an NA, I was an AA, right? So it was a perfect match. We both had a program, right? So we thought. And, you know, he and I had a baby. We started to create a very good life for ourselves. We were very hard workers. And then we had another baby. I have my son, so I have a boy and a girl, a dog, a minivan, you know, the white picket fence. We go from making $15,000, $20,000 a year to $200,000 a year in a span of 11, 12 years. We move to Temecula, build a beautiful, beautiful home with my mother. My father has since passed away. And I'm sober. I'm sober. I have all of this. I have the boy, the girl, the dog, the minivan, the multi-million dollar home, a concrete business, tall, dark, and handsome. You know, I've got it all. And the only thing I didn't have and I couldn't understand was, why was I still so empty inside? Why am I still beating myself up? I went to church. I asked God to forgive me. But I could not get that low self-esteem, that less than, that little poor white girl that I grew up as. I still had that low self-esteem, and I never felt like I did good enough. I cried all the time in church, but I'm sober, right? So I'm in Temecula. I'm there for 9 years. We build this beautiful home, and the gentleman I'm married to decides he wants to go on a golf trip with my brother. This is before he committed suicide. My brother committed suicide in 2014. And he went to Oregon with my brother. Well, they stopped in Tehachapi. And I get a call. He was gone for a week. I get a call from my husband. He's like, we're going to build a shopping center. I'm like, okay, whatever. You know, I got two little kids. I'm running the concrete business. I'm taking care of 9 acres in Tehachapi. I'm trying to hold down the fort while he goes off and has a golf trip because he's a hard worker. And as his wife, that's what I did. I took care of the kids. I took care of the property. I took care of the business. And I'm like, okay, whatever you say. And when he comes back, we're on our way for a family trip to Yosemite. And he's like, I want to show you this town, Tehachapi. And we're coming down the 58, for those of you that know, when you get to the Edison area, and it's all oil fields, and I'm like, I don't want to move here from Temecula. I live in a beautiful multi-million dollar home, and you're going to move me into these oil fields? No. Well, as we came down the 58 and then crossed down into the Arvin drop, I fell in love. I called them my Suede Mountains. It was absolutely gorgeous. The terrain that changed from Edison to that Arvin exit on the 58 was amazing. So we start a business plan. I build a business plan. I'm sober, right? I'm money, property, prestige. I've got it all. Well, Joe and I, shouldn't use his name. Nobody knows him. So we get together and we put a business plan together. We get my mother on board, who is the president CEO of LA Schools Federal Credit Union. My sister, who is sister-in-law, who's a multimillionaire. The three of us as partnerships put together a business plan, and we build a multimillion dollar shopping center in Tehachapi, which is still standing, and it still has my handprints in it. You know, we were concrete, so we put concrete is there. So we've got this 22,000 square foot shopping center. It's taken us 2.5 years to build. During the crunch, 2007, 2008, there were only two properties continuing to build. Mine, construction, the commercial building, and a house. Those were the only two that were building. And they said, you know what, we want you to finish. You guys are a good team, we want you to finish. So we finished it. Now the time comes where we have to rent it and we have to lease it out. I'm trying to lease it out. It's very stressful. Starbucks didn't want to go in. Fresh and Easy didn't want to go in. Trader Joe's didn't want to go in. So Joe has a great idea and he says, let's put in a sports bar. Well, he said, let's put in a pool hall, because I was a very good pool shooter. I'm like, okay. Just pool tables. And so we decide, you know what, we build this shopping center. It goes from a little red wagon to a freaking red sports car. It is the most beautiful 5-star sports bar in Tehachapi called Legends. And it was gorgeous. However, when we start getting the customers in and he sees how difficult it is, he's like, we need alcohol. I said, why? You go to places where they don't serve alcohol. I said, okay, beer and wine. I can't stand beer and wine. Those are my worst hangovers. So we get the beer and wine license, and we start serving liquor. And then he says, we need the hard alcohol license. I'm like, no, Joe, no. I'm an alcoholic. You're a drug addict. Even though I didn't know what alcoholism was, I knew what alcohol did to me. And it wasn't pretty. I didn't like what it did to me, but I had stopped drinking. At this point, I am 17 years sober, right? I go from Temecula, from Torrance to Temecula to Tehachapi, right? I'm 17 years sober. We open up this 5-star sports bar, and he's like, Naomi, you need to drink. I'm like, why? He says, because we're not going to make it. I didn't understand what alcoholism is, so I'm thinking to myself, well, the guy in the book talks about it, 25 years, right? Well, when we finally opened up the bar and I'm working behind the bar, I'm working 18 hours a day, I go home exhausted. And just like the guy with the whiskey and milk, I decided to go to the market and get Bailey's, bottle of Bailey's, in a cute little glass with ice, and I poured that Bailey's over that and took a little sip. Wow, talk about the ease and comfort that came with that. My relapse. That was my relapse. I was 20 years sober when I picked up that drink. But I didn't understand. How is that? because I didn't have this. When Debbie, my sponsor, had me at that Alano Club, I never once touched this book. I used to sit around the table and read, but I had no clue what I was reading. It was that book. And so I pick up the drink. And I'm off and running for about 5 years, I'm going to say. Probably 5 years. And this time, we lose the shopping center. We lose the house. My kid is in college. My daughter's in college. My son is in high school, and he's getting the brunt end of this. I do not know when or how it happened in what was going on in the gentleman's life that I was married to. I have no idea. My language has changed because I came back into the rooms. So I come back in. I pick up that drink. We lose the shopping center. We're trying to make ends meet, and he decides he wants to be the storage war king of Lancaster. So if you ever saw this blonde stringy chick hanging out at one of those storage lockers, it was probably me, because he would drop me off and make me go through the stuff, and then he'd leave and then come back and get me. It was insanity. That's when I was introduced to the side dish, meth. That is the most evil drug on the planet. Any drug is. However, that's what I was introduced to. So not only am I drinking myself into oblivion, I'm now destroying my life with another narcotic. Joe and I, we had a good life. We really did. I didn't have a bad life. I had a good life. My life when I was young, it wasn't bad. It's when I picked up the alcohol that it became bad. So I pick up the drink. We are losing everything. And we decide to go to Oildale. Who knows the 08? Oh, my gosh. We're taking all that crap that we have, and we're opening up a thrift store in Oildale. I'm telling you, I need to make a movie called Insidious in Tehachapi, because it just, there's so much more that you cannot shove into 45 minutes, right? There is a lot of detail. So, what time is it? Okay. So I'm going to get into the steps, and the reason I do this is because the steps is what have changed my life. When I finally had enough on June 6th, 2015, was my last drunk. I had gotten Joe out of the house, gotten the gentleman I was married to out of the house, because there was a lot of domestic violence. And it was either me or him. And I was either going to go, I told him, you know what, you're going to have to take me out on a gurney because I am not leaving my home. And I had a loaded gun, and he would say, why don't you take, then by this time my brother had committed suicide by putting a bullet in his head. And he said, why don't you take the easy way out and do like your brother did? Boy, was I ready. I was so psychologically messed up in the head from the drugs and the alcohol and the behind closed doors abuse that I thought my brain was going to pop out. And so I thought the easy way out would be to kill myself, because I'm worthless still. I'm useless. I'm no good. I'm overweight. When I started drinking Bailey's, I gained like 40 pounds, but then when I did the other stuff, I lost like 80, so it was horrible, right? And so I had to get him out of the house on a restraining order. My last night, I was puking, sweating, throwing up, shaking, horrible my last nights. June 6th and June 7th, I could barely, function, because I went to a bar on June 6th to drink when he was out. And, of course, what happens? I wake up in a hotel in Tehachapi next to I don't know who it is. God, you'd think that many years later, right? No. It talks about it in the book, right? So I like to start with how I got here. Well, Bill says it. Bill says, when I first started, I commenced to forge the weapon that would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. That happened the day I picked up the drink at 17 years old. And I didn't know. but I do now. And then it talks about, in the doctor's opinion, saved my life. When I came into the rooms on June 9th, 2015, another Debbie came into my life. This Debbie is from Tehachapi, and she saw how messed up I was. And she's like, baby, you got to come with me. You're a wreck. I'm like, yeah. And so she took me to Herb Kay's Big Book Study in Culver City. And we would travel every Tuesday, 4 hours talking. And then I opened up the book. This is the book that I got from her back on June 9th, 2015. And I have had it ever since. This is the book I went into at Herb Kay's Big Book Study. And there we opened it up at the first page and started to read. And the doctor's opinion is where I had my spiritual awakening. It says the doctor's theory that we have an allergy to alcohol interests us. As laymen, our opinion as to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that this explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. I couldn't understand why I couldn't stop drinking until I got into the book. With 20 years, if you're not opening up this book, we read it all the time. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Where's the path? It's in the book. Right? It's in the book. So it says the body and the mind is quite as abnormal as his mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have an allergic reaction with an obsession of my mind. That's why I can't stop drinking. I developed the phenomenon of craving. That, you should have seen me. Debbie and I was bouncing around. Herb was like looking at me. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. And Debbie, you're not going to believe this. I know what's wrong with me. I developed the phenomenon. I was so freaking happy. And since that day, I have been happy just like that. Why? Because I've come all the way in and I've sat all the way down. And Debbie, this beautiful woman, had some things happening in her life with her mother and her dad, and she couldn't sponsor me, but she was always there for me. She used to pick me up from my house when I first divorced, and I didn't have water, I didn't have electricity, and I didn't have heat. I'm in Tehachapi. It's 30 degrees right now. And I was in this big house, and I would go out. I had the gentleman I was married to's mistress, Corvette. So, yeah, there was a mistress involved in all of that nightmare. So I would take the Corvette at midnight, and I would go over to the golf course that was broke down, and I'd throw all this wood into the back of the car, and I'd take it home with this little tiny axe that was like this big, and I'd chop that firewood up, and I'd throw it in my fireplace, and I'd get that lit. I'd be all black with soot because I'd try to figure out how to light a fire. I'm a city girl, and, you know, it's like I didn't know how to light a fire, but boy, I learned. And I lit that fire, and I would be like, yay, fire queen. And then I'd take my little pillow and my blanket and my phone and my keys, and I would curl up in front of that fireplace and go to sleep. That's how I stayed warm. I didn't pick up the drink. I got sober, and I didn't pick up that drink. It would take me 4 hours to get ready to get down to the hall in Tehachapi. I couldn't find my keys. I couldn't find a shoe. And with all that stuff from all those lockers, it was a mess. And I would finally find the right shoe. It didn't matter about my socks, but my shoes, and I had to find clothes to get on, to get down, and I would roller skate to the Ilano Club, or the hall that we had. And people be like, was that you, Naomi? I'm like, you bet. And my food, those donuts, that was my meal. I didn't have any food. I didn't have a job. But I would get to that club. Debbie would come pick me up when I was able to see her. And I'd go outside, and I'd flip all the breakers off, and I'd lock the breaker box, and I'd be sobbing. And she's like, baby, you do what you gotta do. And she would let me lock those breakers up because the demons in my head and the shadow people in that house were taking over. They were taking over me at night. And so she just loved me. And that's what I need to remember, is when that young woman comes in or that young man comes in and they are twisted out of their freaking mind, remember where I was, flipping those breakers off. All those marks on my face from the nights before. I have to remember that. And that's why I don't look down on anybody that comes in here. It's taken time. It's who you hang out with is what you're going to be like. I truly believe that. Debbie loved me until I couldn't love myself. So here we are. You know, I figure this out. I'm like, oh, I can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Complete abstinence. Okay, so I have to get to step one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Boom, right? There are 50 pages that you have to get to before you get to step two. 50-something pages, plus the preface, the doctor's opinion, the forewords. You've got to get all that to get an understanding. How am I powerless? Well, let's see. When I was waking up on the floor with I don't know who next to me, I'm a drunk driver. At one point, I worked at a bar, and I was dating the local drug dealer. We were at a bar, and this Hispanic lady pulls out a gun. She's fighting with my guy, and I'm standing there watching this, and I'm like, she's going to kill him. So what do? I grab the gun, and I pull the gun down, and I get shot instead of him. You'd think I would think I was powerless, right? But I continued to drink. I continued to do these same things because I didn't understand. So I get into, you know, more about alcoholism. There's a solution. There's not a cure. Right? I am powerless. I have absolutely no reservation that I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. Well, yeah, okay. You've been shot. You wake up drunk. You wake up to people you don't know. I can't keep a job. When I filled out my application for juvenile hall, they told me to pull my record. I had over 5 pages front and back, 50 jobs, because I couldn't hold down a job because of alcohol and drugs. I could not hold down a job. I was dysfunctional. So we get to the second part of the step. I am absolutely for sure know that I am an alcoholic. No reservation. My life is unmanageable. That was an easy step. Step two, I came to believe in a power greater than myself. I came back into the room and I didn't think that God that I knew back in the church would love me anymore. So I figured I had to find a new one. And little did I know that when I continued to work these steps, that same God is in my life today. And that God is so powerful. I was sharing with her this with a few this afternoon before the meeting, and how he orchestrates everything perfectly. And so I have a God, and that he could restore me to sanity. What's sanity? Soundness of mind. Insanity is mental illness in my world. I was mentally ill. I'm sober and I still do the same things over and over again. But sanity, I have soundness of mind when I do the things that I do. And I don't beat myself up anymore. And then step three, I turned my will and my life, right, over to the care of God as I understood him. That's an ongoing battle because I'm battling human flesh with I believe there's a spiritual fight here. So I'm powerless. I have a God. I try to turn it over to him on a regular basis. And then step four, everybody thinks it's such a scary step, but it's not, because when we get sober, we're not doing those things any longer, supposedly, right? We've made this list. We don't want to add to it, at least not the length that it was in the beginning. So I have faced these. I see where, not my part, it's my thing. I see where I was at fault. I'm not looking at the other person, because if I say it's my part, you got a part in it too. Where was I at fault? I see the fault in when I was with the gentleman I was married to. And so I was able to put that out. Step five, I met Debbie Davis when I had 2 years sobriety. I met her at that meeting that I met you guys at in Bakersfield. And I wanted what she had. She was beautiful. She was eloquent. She was articulate. And she was just something that was very attractive. It's a program of attraction, right? She had what I wanted, so I asked her to be my sponsor. She was my sponsor for 5.5 years over the phone, because she was in Concord, I was in Tehachapi. I got up every morning, Tuesday and Thursdays at 4:30 to get my call in. That woman put me on the foundation of recovery that I'm on today. Absolutely. And yes, she taught me to wear a dress, so forgive me. forgive me. Just forgive me. So we did five, and we did step five. I did it with her at her house in in Concord, and it took like 6.5 hours. And afterwards, I had to sit quietly, right, and just think about it. That is what really helped me look at myself. So when I'm doing step six, and people overlook six, I don't know why, but they do. Step six is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. All it is it's a thought. Let me do this. I want to do this. And the action comes in step seven. And in the book, it's just a paragraph. It's a little sentence. It's the seven-step prayer. That's the seventh step. And I have to do that regularly. Now, step eight, we're going to make a list of all persons we had harmed, right? Including the gentleman I was married to. Including his mistress. I made a lot of amends. Those were two that I had to wait on. There's a good reason why we wait on a lot of these. Because we're not ready. It's not time. I was going through her horrific divorce. Debbie Davis said, not yet. And I listened. When she told me to go left, I went left. When she told me to go right, I went right. And I did what she, and that's why I'm at where I'm at today. So when I've got this list, and step nine, I'm going to share two amends. The one is to the gentleman I was married to. 7 years I couldn't talk to him because of the divorce. My divorce took over 6 years. And the seventh year, we had a grandson. And so I called him to congratulate him. I was allowed to talk to him now. And I said, congratulations on our grandson. He's like, Naomi, can you help me get into recovery? Hey, guess what? I am involved all the way in and sitting all the way down. I am responsible when anyone, including the gentleman I was married to, anywhere, Needles, California, asks for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. For that, I'm responsible. I said, get in your car, get down to Tehachapi. We'll get you down to Good Sam, Good Samaritan Hospital. If you told me 11 years ago that I'd be sitting on the lawn in Bakersfield in front of Chick-fil-A eating a sandwich with this man, I would have said you were crazy. Because 11 years ago, I wanted to take a baseball bat to him and put him in the hospital. I did not want him okay. The second amends that is very powerful is his mistress. I'm thinking, what do I owe her an amends for? That's good sponsorship. She says, well, let's. And I had left Debbie. I was with her for 5.5 years. And Debbie, the one that's with me now, my third Debbie, the one that was with me from the beginning that told me, baby, do what you got to do, she is my current sponsor. And she said, let's look at this. So we looked at it, and I saw that I contributed to her disease by selling her Norcos to pay the gas bill. Oh. Well, how do you make an amends to somebody that's been in a coma for 5 years and then in a vegetative state for another 5 years? She's been in the hospital for 10 years. And I went to that hospital, and I sat at her bedside, and I wept. Because it was not the woman that I knew 10 years ago. She had been in a drug-induced coma, and it was an insulin-induced coma. She's not diabetic. Something happened. Some foul play happened. However, I went there, and I made my amends to her. And then her sister said, would you take flowers to her in April? Absolutely. Absolutely, I'll take him to her. So I made that amends. Step 9, steps 10, 11, and 12 are, I believe, the continued growth steps. Step 12 is my favorite step. And, you know, we continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong. We promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening, which I did, as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Since I came all the way in and sat all the way down, I have been very, very involved in hospitals and institutions, which has completely changed my life. I go into 3 different prisons. It didn't start that way. I started at the Salvation Army, worked my way up to recovery homes, and then to treatment facilities. And then I went to my first H&I conference where the men sitting up there, 8 men from Soledad, down 16 years, down 45 years. I'm like, it was questions and answers. I said, look at me. I'm an old white female who's never been in prison. I'm a drunk. I've been in the drunk tank. What do I have to offer you? Let me tell you, every single man on that panel answered me, you continue to come see us. You make us feel like we're human. Your story doesn't change. We go on lockdown, you come back. We bring in books to these men and these women that are in prison and in treatment facilities and in recovery homes. It has been the best thing. I have to kick up my game all the time because I don't ever want to pick up a drink or a drug again as long as I live. As long as I continue this way that's in front of me, I should have a good shot. There's two people. Sylvia Kay in Keys of the Kingdom talks about that this is a AA is a plan of recovery that cannot be finished and done with. It's a way of life. And then one of my favorite, of course, is Dr. Bob. And Dr. Bob, at the end of his thing, he says, I'm going to read this last part and be all done. If I can find Dr. Bob's, see, look at this book. My book is falling apart and my life is falling into place. Right? It's crazy. It's crazy how it works. Okay. I spend a great deal of time passing on what I learned to others who want it and need it badly. I do it for four reasons. One, it's a sense of duty. Two, it's a pleasure. Three, because in doing so, I'm paying my debt to the woman who took the time out to pass it on to me. And four, because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous and the way of life, this way of life, and what this life has done for me. Thank you.